And this is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Check out playlists, podcasts, and more at KAXE.org.
Asking folks today to text in their favorite way to use apples or to eat apples. Elaine says, my favorite way is one of the large caramel apples at Rocky Mountain Chocolate Factory. They'll cut them into bite-sized pieces for you, making them easier to eat. The caramel apple with chocolate and pecans is my favorite.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah, it does. Maybe I have to change my mind. Sunny skies expected today with mid-60s to low 70s and south-southeast winds 5 to 11, gusting up to 21. Mostly clear tonight, lows 41 to 47. Looks like tomorrow could get into the 80s. We're very excited and sunny. Little cooler, but sun on Friday with 60 to 65 degrees.
And programming is supported by The Forge in Grand Rapids, offering a space where students, entrepreneurs, and workers can bring their ideas to evolve into products, careers, or businesses, building a culture of innovation and diversity in the heart of Itasca County. Learn more at theforgeitasca.org, where ideas take shape. Now it's time for the Up North Report.
For KAXE News, I'm Larissa Donovan with the Up North Report. A portion of the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness is now closed because of another wildfire in the region. The Shell Lake Fire is about a half acre in size and is burning timber. It is suspected to be human-caused, but an official fire investigation has not yet occurred. The fire has the potential to spread to the east near Agawato Lake and a portion of the Sioux Hustler hiking trail. This trail and three campsites nearby are closed to the public, along with the entry point on the lake. Northern Minnesota is facing drought conditions, causing active and increasing fire across the landscape. Federal and state firefighters have responded to several human-caused wildfires in recent days. A Cloquet Bridge is at risk of sudden collapse and is closed until repairs are completed. The Superior National Forest announced in a news release that the Cloquet River Bridge on Langley River Road has integrity issues due to June's flood. The center pier of the bridge is scoured, meaning stream sediment like the sand and gravel around the bridge's foundation washed away from fast-flowing water, creating holes. The bridge is closed to all traffic, including pedestrians and ATVs, with more information on storm impacts on the Superior National Forest website. Four tribes in Minnesota received federal funding to address violent crime and the opioid epidemic. Senator Tina Smith announced the funding for seven tribal public safety initiatives as part of her work as a member of the Senate Indian Affairs Committee. The Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, Red Lake Band of Chippewa, Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe, and White Earth Nation received funds ranging between $450,000 and $900,000 for various tribal programs. These programs will be tailored to each tribe's unique needs, like White Earth expanding tribal court capacity for home visits and supervision, and Mille Lacs hiring staff to investigate child abuse and neglect cases. Senator Smith says the grants are, quote, directly supporting tribally driven solutions to challenges like violent crime and the opioid epidemic. Red Lake Chairman Daryl Seeke says with funding from two awards, Red Lake will be able to, quote, expand services for children who may have been victims of crime in a culturally based and trauma-informed manner, as well as provide medication-assisted therapy at the Red Lake Detention Center. Leech Lake Tribal Police Chief Kenneth Washington says Leech Lake's funding will be used for additional staff to help respond to the opioid epidemic. The November election is 1 month from Tuesday, and Minnesota is part of a new multi-state poll that draws feedback from rural voters. Mike Bowen has the story.
The firm tapped by the Rural Democracy Initiative reached out to likely voters in 10 states, including Minnesota, and economic issues topped the list of concerns. Minnesota resident Sharon Gunderson lives in East Bethel, a small city north of Minneapolis. She was not part of the poll, but says she plans to support Donald Trump this fall because of his economic vision. She's still concerned about consumer prices, and she feels the current administration is pushing too hard on the transition to clean energy.
Electric vehicles, you should have everything electric. We don't have the power grid to handle that. And it takes common sense to know that.
But according to the poll, not all rural voters share the same views on specific aspects of the economy and which candidate is best suited to handle them. Kamala Harris holds a slight advantage when asked who is trusted to lower housing costs, support small businesses, and foster a tax structure that benefits the middle class. Residents from key battleground states such as Arizona were also part of the new RDI poll. Tristan Young, a voter from the Grand Canyon state, says neither major party candidate has an agenda he feels would impact him personally. But as a father, he says supporting Kamala Harris is the best way to go in this election.
I have three black daughters, and I feel like it would inspire them. And that's my reasoning.
As for the poll, Harris does enjoy more support among BIPOC voters from rural areas. Donald Trump has the overall edge among rural voters in this survey. However, 73% of Democrats from smaller communities report feeling more enthusiastic than usual about voting, compared to 63% of Republicans. I'm Mike Moen.
From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Larissa Donovan. KAXE's election guide is now available at KAXE.org, where you can find more of our stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is sponsored by Woodland Bank, dedicated to serving local businesses, families, and nonprofits in our area since 1920. You can find more information online at woodland.bank.
It is 7:06. More news is coming up next from National Public Radio. We're learning about Michigan election deniers. We receive support from Atchison Tire in Grand Rapids, providing service and offering tire brands like Bridgestone, Firestone, and Doyo, serving the area since 1916. More at atchisontire.com.
Our thanks also goes out to FixCon Roofing, professionally trained roofers committed to using local building suppliers for your custom roofing needs in northern Minnesota. More information online at fikscon.com.
And support comes from Hot Spring Hot Tub of Northern Minnesota on Middle School Avenue in Bemidji, offering hot tubs, pool tables, saunas, and more. Information available at hotspringhottubmn.com.
We're not hearing from folks on apple pie. We're asking your favorite way to have apples. I would assume pie is the big deal.
I would think it'd be the number one.
Yeah, I'm not a big apple pie fan. Unless
really?
It's homemade. I mean, of course, if someone made me a pie and gave me a piece, I'd love it. But I would never like go to the bakery and buy an apple pie.
Oh, get some whipped cream on there. Ooh, not
give me
much.
A piece of cake any day.
Would you do fudge on top of a pie? I mean, not fudge, but like chocolate syrup?
On apple?
Yeah.
No. How about cheese? 218-326-1234.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News.
I think on Monday, Malachi was saying he
and
likes cheese.
And I'm Layla Faldin at WDET in Detroit, Michigan. Many Americans are going into this presidential election still convinced that the last vote was stolen from them. We see that in a small community we visit a couple hours outside of Detroit. On a Thursday night, people are gathering at a church in Hillsdale County.
Would you like a soft taco?
Yes, please. There's a table with t-shirts for sale. One has that iconic photo of a bloody Donald Trump with his fist in the air moments after he was shot at a rally. His words, fight, 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 are emblazoned above the image. Flyers say, swamp them with votes, make our victory too big to rig. This is the monthly meeting of America First in Hillsdale. The group broke with the local Republican Party here over a battle for control that it lost. It sees itself as the true protector of conservative values.
Our group here that you're seeing here today is a group of Republicans that weren't happy with the Republican Party.
That's Josh Gritzmaker, the newly appointed chair of America First in Hillsdale.
We got involved, got off the sidelines, wanted to be part of the political process.
He takes $10 donations from attendees, puts them in a red cash box, and hands out raffle tickets. This faction of the GOP has a reputation for being far right, confrontational, and conspiratorial. An early leader helped charter buses to take residents to the Capitol on January 6th. Inside the meeting room of the church, about 50 people gather.
So I actually started my homestead farming journey.
The featured guests for this evening include a woman homesteader, an advocate for the homeless, and an inspirational speaker who survived a terrible car accident. The raffle winners are announced.
7596.
Hey, I finally won!
There's also a late add to the evening program.
So our next speaker...
A young man in a brown suit with long floppy hair.
How's it going, guys? It's great to be in Hillsdale. I've only been to Hillsdale one other time, and I didn't even get to go downtown. This place is a lot bigger than I thought it'd be.
Carter Chain is from the Trump campaign's election integrity team. He's there to recruit.
What I need are people on the ground. I need troops in the trenches. I need poll challengers. I need poll workers. We're going to do our bit to make sure that everything goes according to plan without a hitch.
Chain takes aim at laws that expanded voting rights in the state, and he zeroes in on mail-in voting.
Absentee ballots, I think, is what we're all worried about, especially with the loose laws we have here in the state.
He then goes after Michigan's Democratic Secretary of State, who oversees elections.
Jocelyn Benson being our Secretary of State, I know we're all big fans of Jocelyn Benson here, right, guys?
Benson's a regular target of election deniers in Michigan, and Chain leans into that.
I was expecting a collective boo.
Over the last 4 years, she's been threatened. Armed protesters showed up at her house. And just a few months ago, a hoax call led to a SWAT team descending on her home. To get a sense of just how many people are concerned about an unfair election, I go to the front of the room and ask a couple of questions.
Do you feel good about the process? Do you trust that it will be fair?
No.
Raise your hand if it's a no, so I can really see. That's every hand except for three. Are you all voting?
Yes.
So even though you don't trust the process 100%, you are voting?
You still have to try.
If the outcome is something that you don't trust, what happens then?
Well, we want to know. Revolution.
Who said, I heard the word revolution. Who said that? Nobody?
Yeah, somebody
I'm sorry,
said it.
Who said that?
Nobody said it, you said it, and I got a question for you in regard to that. Why do you, in the media, constantly feel compelled to try to rattle the cage?
That's not true because I heard somebody else say it.
These feelings of distrust in the election process and institutions in general have taken root in the last 4 years as one presidential candidate, Donald Trump, repeats the false claim of widespread voter fraud in 2020. That's despite dozens of court cases that found no evidence of this, including by Trump-appointed judges. A recent NPR PBS News Marist poll shows that more than half of Americans say they're concerned or very concerned there will be voter fraud this election. After the meeting, I sit down with Gritzmaker and I ask him if he believes Trump lost in 2020.
I'm on the fence about it because I've seen too much funny business going on to say he lost 100%. But then you also see stuff where, well, I don't have any solid proof. I don't see the courts ruling in that favor.
Right.
The I don't see the whistleblowers that we were promised step forward.
When you're thinking about the election, I mean, with America First, are you going to have poll watchers?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of members here that are going to get involved just to have peace of mind. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, hey, maybe they found a couple spoiled ballots. Hey, maybe they found a couple of miscues. Maybe they don't. And then they're like, hey, you know, this was a good, fair election. Maybe some folks can get involved and be part of that process that have never been part of that process before and solidify that there's some funny business going on or solidify that, hey, these are a lot cleaner than what we've been told.
If the outcome ends up being not the candidate that you support, will you accept it?
You know, if it's, if my folks that go in and volunteer and they're poll watchers and they all come back and say, hey, Josh, it was clean. It was completely clean. I'm going to trust their boots on the ground statements more than anything I'll see on TV.
Cameron Wheeler to the office, please. Cameron Wheeler to the office.
The next morning at a public high school, Abe Dane, the deputy county clerk of Hillsdale and the elections director, is setting up a presentation for a civics class.
One of my goals is to help you guys not be intimidated by the election process.
He addresses common conspiracies.
How many of you guys have heard someone saying there's thousands of dead people on the voter rolls and dead people are voting? You heard that before?
And then he explains how it actually works.
There are over 1,500 township clerks 83 county clerks and I don't know how many hundreds of city clerks in the whole entire state, and we can all see each other's voters. Do you think it'd be hard, now that you know that, do you think it'd be hard to hide thousands of dead voters and to actually have them vote? So it would be difficult to do that, right? There's a lot of accountability.
In front of him, he has a voting tabulator machine set up.
Is before every election, this machine gets tested in a public meeting by that election commission.
Then he runs a mock election where students feed their ballots into the machine.
It's got the arrow. You see the green arrows? You can just put it right in there and then wait for the American flag to show up. And it'll say it's counted it. There you go. Good job.
Sweet.
See, nothing to it.
He reads out the results.
Bugs Bunny got 5 votes. Porky Pig got 5 votes for Congress. John Pork.
After class, Dane tells us he's been doing these presentations for a few years. It's his way of pulling the curtain back on a process he even had questions about before he became an election worker.
I'm trying to allow them to go through the same steps that I did, because I am a Republican and I did not understand why Trump lost when it appeared he was winning when I went to bed back in 2020.
He's part of what America First calls the old guard of the Republican Party in town. He's seen by the group as a sellout, and he finds the label frustrating and kind of amusing. He says he knows innocent mistakes on Election Day could inspire another wave of conspiracy theories around election fraud.
The pressure keeps me up at night. I have an app on my phone where it's like a post-it note app, and I'll wake up at 3 a.m. and I'll put something on there before I forget to check on it when I get to the office. It's such a complicated system that there are going to be mistakes. There absolutely will be mistakes, but they will be explained and there will be a reason for them. And in the end, the number of people that voted and the number of ballots that we have is going to balance and match.
Do election workers feel safe going into this election?
Not always. Especially when you look at the number of female election workers compared to male election workers and how rural our community is, and one of our precincts in particular is on a dirt road. Response times for police are 15 minutes or more.
He's in touch with law enforcement just in case. But in this small community,
most of these people, when they get to a precinct and they're dealing with the clerk, they're dealing with their grandma. They're face-to-face with their grandma, basically.
Dane is talking about grandmas like Ruth Sanders and Anita Coe.
Hi, Anita.
Hi.
How are you? I'm Layla.
Hi, Layla.
We meet them at the polling place they'll be working in a few weeks.
I personally feel a little bit anxious just because of the rhetoric that goes on. I just hope we don't get people coming in that have their party's signature on them, because then we have to confront them and ask them, you know, you can't wear that shirt in here, or you can't wear that hat in here. You have to change it inside out, or whatever you have to do not to affect somebody else's vote, because I feel like they could be confrontational.
Yeah. I'm just curious what you guys are thinking about security-wise if something goes awry or somebody becomes confrontational. Do you have any sort of plans in your mind?
Not good ones.
I mean, I guess we could break a window, but I don't know how feasible that would be.
We'd have to lift each other out.
Oh, that's but, true.
But I don't know. I guess you would just duck and hide, you know. You'd run to the bathroom and lock the door and hide.
Coe and Sanders don't think they'll need these plans, but they do worry about the days after, if some Americans, once again, don't accept the results. This is NPR News.
It is 7:19, and you're listening to the Wednesday Morning Show. Coming up in a bit, we are going to have Best Wishes, and also we're going to play a tune from the KBXE Vinyl Library from the Vault. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with Heidi Holton.
How can you not be excited for your Wednesday with Andrew's enthusiasm? You keep us going, Andrew. Thank you.
And then coming up at 9 o'clock, it's going to be On the River with our volunteer host, Gina the Knife.
Oh, nice. So many things going on in our region, and that includes tomorrow night. We're going to be talking in about an hour. Jack Nackbar, the retired film and pop culture professor from Bowling Green University. He has chosen the film for tomorrow night. It's All the President's Men, free and open to everyone at 6:30 at the Edge Center for the Arts in Big Fork.
One of my favorite actors is Jason Robards.
Oh.
Who you might remember from Little Big League, where the one kid inherits the Minnesota Twins.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I love Robert Redford and Dustin. I love that. I just think they're both great in this film. And it's so fun to see young Dustin Hoffman, for some reason, just running around, his nose in everything, sitting on the desk in the busy newsroom. It's just exciting. So
nothing's on the line except the entire, what is it, Bill of Freedom of the Press or something like
yes.
that? I forget the line. Oh, I messed it up.
That's all right. We'll talk about it. I'm sure Jack will know. That'll be coming up and about 8:10. And then we're checking in with Lori Shaw. She is our staff photographer for KEXE. She was at the Lynx game last night. Spoiler alert, they won. We're headed to the finals, and that will be against the New York Liberty. And that game, the first game, is coming up. Waiting for the app to load. Here we go. Here we go. It's Thursday night already.
Wow.
And that will be in New York.
That's a quick turnaround.
Lots of movie stars and film stars end up at these games now because WNBA is so hot. Jason Sudeikis is at almost every single New York Liberty game.
I just had a conversation with our news director, Chelsea Perkins, about Jason Sudeikis yesterday.
Uh-oh.
I don't care for him.
Oh. So you didn't like Ted Lasso?
I did not like Ted Lasso.
I thought we were friends, man. That's some controversial business.
I mean, it's fair for me to have this opinion because when he was on Saturday Night Live, he was up against Bill Hader, yeah. Kristen Wiig, yeah. and Will Forte, who I thought were just like 100 times funnier than him.
Yeah. He was more the straight man, wasn't he, when he was on?
Yeah.
Or it didn't always.
But every time he's like a guest star in TV shows, too, I didn't like him. I didn't like him in 30 Rock. I didn't like him in Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
See, I definitely knew who he was, but it was Ted Lasso that drew me in. I wouldn't say he was one of my favorites on Saturday Night Live at all. So, mm-hmm. But I know, you're looking at me. It's something I really enjoyed. I needed it at that time, so I'm not going to fight you on that one. I think I might rewatch Ted Lasso this winter.
Wow.
Yes.
I haven't rewatched a show in a long time, but I don't really watch TV shows. I'm mostly a movie guy now.
Oh, sure. We're going to hear about what movies you've seen recently, but let's tell you about the weather first. Sunny, high 66 to 72, south-southeast winds 5 to 11, gusting up to 21, and mostly clear overnight tonight, lows 41 to 47. Tomorrow, 78 to 83 with sunny skies.
And support comes from Timberlake Lodge in Grand Rapids, offering an endless soup and salad bar for lunch and burgers and hand-cut steaks for dinner online at timberlakelodgehotel.com. And we receive support from the Northwest Minnesota Foundation, serving 2 tribal nations and 12 counties in Northwest Minnesota, supporting ideas and providing resources to lift up the people, business, and communities who call Northwest Minnesota home. More at nwmf.org.
You've got to check out KEXE.org for our election guide. It just went live yesterday. Big kudos to our news team. This is a huge endeavor, bringing information to you you're not going to find anywhere else. Every contested race within northern Minnesota, they reached out to candidates running for township, for school board, for city, county, and state house, and they sent them these questionnaires, and you can find the information and judge for yourself who you might want to vote for. It's available right now. You can't miss it. Top of the page, KAXE.org. And tonight, if you live in the Grand Rapids area or in the school district there, we are co-hosting the forum with ICTV. It'll be broadcast live on ICTV at 7 p.m. tonight, the school board forum for the Grand Rapids and Big Fork area. Megan Buffington will be the moderator. I'll kind of open it up. And we've been taking questions from the public. People have been sending us questions. So we'll do the best we can. I think there'll be at least 8 candidates on the stage. So
wow.
It's got to go kind of fast. We had to figure how much time they each got and all of that stuff. Because if you gave them a minute, then you can only get to like 5 questions maybe, or mm-hmm. even less than that. So We'll see. It'll be a good time tonight. And then continuing on, Lakeland Public Television Debate Night will be Thursday, Friday night, and those will be out of the Brainerd studio. And they've got some House candidates from that region. Megan Buffington will be on the air with them Thursday and Friday.
And we receive support from Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty, offering decades of experience to guide your real estate journey from buying or selling to land or lakeshore. Be moved by Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty. More information at coldwellbankernorthwoods.com.
I see a little light behind your shoulder there.
A little light, yes.
It
that is.
That is
a record player.
All right. That means you got something from the vault for us?
Yeah, I decided to play kind of a classic tune. I was shocked to see this record because reprints of it go for very expensive money. So it was exciting to find this one in nice condition, too. And do you know the Left Banc at all?
No.
They were like a 60s rock group, and they were all like teenagers when they started the band. And this song I'm about to play, I believe they wrote when they were like 15, 16 years old. And it's about unrequited love, sort of.
Ah.
So it's a classic. This is the Left Banc with their classic song, Walk Away, Renee. All right. Doesn't get much better than that. That's the Left Banc with Walk Away Renee, which the lead singer wrote about another band member's girlfriend.
Oh.
And they have to perform it. I just find that really funny.
Very interesting. I, of course, knew the song. I did not know who the band was.
Do you know their other song, Pretty Ballerina?
No.
Ooh, it's a good one, too.
Is it? Do you think I'd recognize it?
Maybe.
Okay. We've been talking apples. That's our question of the week. It's apple season. What's your favorite way to eat or cook an apple? We heard from someone saying the favorite apple way is apple butter. My grandma used to make toast in the morning with apple butter, and it was so yummy. What I remember most is that she used to refrigerate her real butter, and she'd always struggle trying to spread it on the toast before spreading the apple butter. Mm. To this day, I still wonder why anyone wouldn't keep at least one stick of butter at room temp. I agree. That is a terrible situation when you have cold butter and you have a piece of toast.
Yeah, but I don't use butter enough where, like, leaving it out at room temp, it's just going to go bad.
Hmm.
So that's the problem I run into.
Okay, so but you're not a big butter person.
I guess I don't use butter that much.
Okay.
I don't have a toaster. I love buttered toast.
You don't have a toaster.
I don't have a toaster. Should I get a toaster?
Perhaps.
Should I become a toast guy?
I think you should. Toast is the new black. Yeah. Toast is really good. In fact, yesterday was one of our members, Cora Braun. It was her 11th birthday. And she was on with us for What's for Breakfast once. And she talked about her, one of her favorite things in the world is mom toast.
Oh.
Like when your mom makes it, it was perfect, which I agreed. That's what happened. That's what it was like with my mom. And I just like, oh, I love your toast. I think it was the amount of butter, probably. and she got it just at the right level. Not too brown and not too soft.
Mm-hmm.
But my mom would get mad because she cooked a lot for us, and that I was commenting on toast really made her angry. So I think it could be a whole new thing for you. You could make avocado toast.
I'm not a big avocado guy.
Okay. Well, we'll find other things for
peanut
you.
Peanut butter toast?
Yes.
Love I have that.
It's see, how can you live without that?
Peanut Do you butter? Know what the, have you ever heard that old saying, the difference between a professional chef and a amateur chef?
No.
A professional chef actually uses a bunch of butter.
Yeah, that's true. So what was I going to say about the, yeah, I think if you like peanut butter toast, I don't know how you're living without it.
Yeah, I guess maybe I just need to find a good toaster for me, you know?
Right. If anybody has recommendations, that might be good. I know our toaster's okay. I just don't want to buy a new one.
I make a delicious bagel sandwich, but I don't have a toaster now. So I've been like baking the bagels in the oven, which is not a efficient way to toast a bagel.
But I bet it tastes good.
It still tastes good.
You do have an oven, so you probably don't need a toaster oven.
No, I guess not. No.
Okay. I was never somebody who would even considered a toaster oven. And I have one now that does all kinds of things. Bakes, roasts, air fries.
Wow.
Broils. It's pretty cool. And
how big are we talking here? Bigger than a bread box?
Yeah, a little bit bigger than a bread box. Our oven is not working, and I'm not going to talk about the fire I set in there. But
oh, no.
So we are going with this until we make a choice on what we're going to do, because we have a Brady Bunch-like house, and our oven is built into the brick wall.
Oh.
So if we want to make a bit, you know, it's not as easy to find that shape anymore. We've replaced it once, and we just got to make some decisions of if we remodel. Maybe we don't want the oven in there. Maybe it becomes a decorative planter's place. I don't know. We'll see. But anyway, I enjoy it. I did not think I would like it, and I really enjoy it. I used it only once for toast because it was for more than two people. Mm-hmm. I was making breakfast for, and you can toast it in there multiple instead of waiting and then some of it's cold kind mm-hmm. of thing. So that's nice.
So now it's time for best wishes. We yep. do our best to wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary for today, October 9th. First up, we got Mark and Becky Statham, who are in Brainerd, celebrating their 42nd anniversary.
And Carol Williams from Deer River, happy 72nd to you.
And now I'm going to play a brand new song for you. This is from our latest singles compilation. This song is a bluegrass band, Yonder Mountain String Band. This song is called Here I Go.
Gonna get in my own way. Maybe I enjoy it. Does that make me insane? Wish that I could be the version of me in my dreams. Feels right when I'm wrong. Broken. broken. I don't know what to change. The same old suffering don't hold me down these days. So take me if you can, leave me if you can't understand. I will come to the light, just let me have my time in the night. They might be lying. Pour another cup of coffee. Let the racing thoughts begin. Am I growing or failing? Which narrative will win?
That was Yonder Mountain String Band with Here I Go. If you have a birthday or anniversary to share, text us at 218-326-1234. We receive support from the Grand Rapids Farmers Market, open Wednesdays and Saturdays from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the intersection of Golf Course Road and Pokegama Avenue, offering an EBT triple match and many more programs, bringing produce to members of our community. More at grfarmersmarket.org.
It's Andrew DeZingle. I'm Heidi Holt, and we've been asking about apples all this week for our question of the week. We just heard from Kari Headland. She said a butter crock is the way to go for soft butter that won't go bad. We were talking about apple butter, and then talking about the person who loved the apple butter remembers the cold butter underneath the apple butter didn't work so well. So she sent a picture of this, and it keeps it soft and not contaminated, I guess, or it doesn't melt as fast. I don't know. This is a time of year where I can easily keep it on the on the counter because it's not going to go bad. Mm-hmm. Summer, a little tougher.
I had a little fruit fly problem, but I think I took care of it now, yeah. So I should be good to have butter now.
I don't like the fruit flies.
Nope. And coming up in about an hour, it's going to be my Area Voices, where I have a conversation with author Steve Hoffman, who moved his entire family to France for a bit. And it doesn't go quite as how he planned, but still a worthy experience.
The Grand Rapids Players continue their run of Dracula, a comedy of terrors, and that's October 11th through 13th in the Ives Studio Theater at the Rife Center. Also, you can go this Thursday night to learn about ash basket making. There's an event at Rail River Folk School in Bemidji. It's at 6:30. There'll be a demonstration of ash log pounding, a slideshow of one family's history of basket making on the White Earth Reservation, and a brief overview on the Emerald Ash Borer.
And programming is supported by Empty Bowls, fighting local hunger and building a stronger community with the Grand Rapids and Deer River Community Cafe. The event takes place Thursday, October 24th at Timberlake Lodge from 11 to 2 and 4 to 7. Tickets include soup and locally made ceramic bowl. More info on Facebook at Itasca Empty Bowls Project. And coming up in a half hour, we're going to be talking to Jack Nackbar about the classic movie series going on in Big Fork at Edge Center for the Arts, and talking about the movie All the President's Men, which Heidi said is one of her favorite movies of all time.
Mm-hmm. I think. That's hard. It's hard for me to say.
Can you think of one off the top of your head that's your absolute favorite?
Oh, let me think on it.
All right.
It's hard because it's a different genres. It's hard to figure. Is it the, like, cozy sort of film, or is it the movie that I think is just like the best piece of cinema kind of thing, mm-hmm. over like emotional reaction to it?
Perhaps a horror movie. It is the spooky time of year.
No thanks, not my deal. We'll maybe talk about that a little bit more. You like the spookies?
I love the spookies.
I like some. We'll talk about it. We'd love to hear from you. Is there a favorite spooky movie? 218-326-1234.
Yeah. Do you have a Halloween tradition movie? You know, like some people have Hocus Pocus, the Three Witches movie. Never seen it?
Mm-mm.
You probably wouldn't like it at this point.
I know. I don't think it holds up. It's too far gone. I know. You have to have that nostalgic feel about it, I think.
Or Halloween, the John Carpenter.
I mean, I've seen it. We would watch it and scare each other in high school. But
Frankenstein with Boris Karloff?
No, not my deal.
Well, we want to hear what your thoughts are. Text us at 218-326-1234. Now we're going to hear more from Morning Edition. This is about Hurricane Milton closing in and a book called Us Fools about the farming crisis.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. Amy Martinez.
And I'm Leila Fadel. Millions of people who live on Florida's west coast are preparing and waiting anxiously for Hurricane Milton.
Yeah, Milton is one of the most powerful hurricanes ever in the Gulf of Mexico and is expected to hit Florida late tonight. The hurricane has 160 mile per hour winds and could bring a storm surge as high as 15 feet to parts of Florida's coast between Fort Myers and Tampa.
NPR's Greg Allen is in Florida and he joins us now from Brandon just outside Tampa. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Lila.
Okay, so Florida was just really battered by Hurricane Helene. Has that motivated people to take evacuation orders seriously now?
It appears so. You know, people are still cleaning up here from Helene, and there are still piles of debris everywhere when you drive around here. But another factor, though, is that meteorologists and emergency managers are warning that the impacts of Milton will be worse than Helene. And this is an area that's very susceptible to storm surge. Here's National Hurricane Center Director Mike Brennan.
And you're going to have structural damage to buildings. Some buildings will wash away. Evacuation routes will be quickly cut off. We've lost people to storm surge in previous hurricanes who are trying to get out at the last minute, and they drown in their cars.
Wow. So are people in the storm surge areas leaving?
Yes, many are. We have reports that some of the riskiest areas, you know, the beach communities out on the barrier islands, that they've really emptied out. But there will always be some who decide to stay, of course. I ran into one yesterday. Edward Vilmetti was gassing up his vehicle and heading out to his home in Tarpon Springs. He lives near the Gulf and is in an evacuation zone, but he said he was planning to stay.
I survived Hurricane Charlie. I've survived Hurricane Irma.
You know, we lost power for 2-3 weeks at a time for both Irma and Charlie. For me, it's just something I'm used to.
This one, of course, they're saying could be the worst one in a century, right?
Right, absolutely.
15-foot storm surge some areas.
Terrifying, definitely.
You know, Vilmetti said he thought he might see as much as 10 feet of water in his home, but he said he definitely was not leaving.
Hmm. Now, Milton is a monster of a storm now, and it hasn't made landfall yet. How powerful could it get when it does reach land?
Well, the National Hurricane Center expects that Milton will weaken some as it approaches the coast, but it's still projected to be a major Category 4 hurricane with 130-mile-per-hour winds when it makes landfall. And Milton will remain at hurricane strength as it crosses west-east across the Florida Peninsula before exiting out onto the Atlantic. Governor Ron DeSantis is warning residents of Orlando and other parts of central Florida that they have to be ready. They may see winds strong enough to destroy mobile homes and other structures, as well as tornadoes. And there could be as much as 18 inches of rain in some areas. Is likely to bring flash flooding. Here's the governor.
So this is not just an event about the west coast of Florida. That will be where the initial impacts and probably the most significant, but the impacts will not be limited there.
Okay, so Milton is expected to hit tonight. How much can you tell us about precisely when and what parts of Florida could be hit hardest?
Right. Yeah. Well, it looks like Milton will hit Florida's west coast either late tonight or early tomorrow morning. The speed is varied as it's come through the Gulf. As to where it hits, that's an important question, but one the National Hurricane Center warns us that we should not focus on. Because Milton has grown in size as it's approached the coast, its storm surge, winds, and rain will affect a very large area. Hurricanes, of course, also sometimes wobble as they grow and reform, and Milton has done that a few times. The models show it now on a path a little south of Tampa Bay, but it's important to note that this far out, the Hurricane Center's track forecasts are off by an average of 60 miles, and the message is so almost all of Florida's west coast should be ready for this storm.
NPR's Greg Allen in Brandon, Florida. Thank you, Greg, and stay safe.
Okay, thank you.
In the 1980s, farmers across America faced economic ruin, shaping the way agriculture works to this day. A new novel follows two young sisters growing up on a Midwest farm during that time. It's titled Us Fools. Here's the host of NPR's Book of the Day podcast, Andrew Limbong.
It's 1987, and Congress is deliberating a bill about giving aid to farmers when Bernadette, our narrator, watches her sister, Jo, jump off the roof of a barn. Here's author Nora Lang reading from her novel, Us Fools.
I was 9 going on 10 and she was 11. I wanted to experience falling as a way to train myself. Jo had said about her ill-fated experiment jumping onto the concrete to feel something.
Bernie and Jo live on a farm in Illinois and things are not going well. Here's President Reagan speaking in 1985.
Today, we find ourselves with farmers who grow more than they can sell. And the result is low commodity prices and a depressed rural economy. And this in spite of how much we've spent.
Family farms were borrowing and borrowing and borrowing and basically getting squeezed out.
Many of them had to sell their farms altogether, breaking the fabric of American farm life. And Lang says it was small family farms that bore the brunt of this.
Who felt pretty abandoned by both the government and the banks.
The sisters in Lang's novel exist here, on the edge of insolvency. But they're young girls, so while particularly Bernadette is attuned to, say, the progress of farm aid bills in Congress, the two are more than happy to watch the Sally Jesse Raphael show every day. They know their dad is looking for wickedly high-interest loans just to keep the farm afloat, but they'd rather spend their days debating whether or not mermaids can get yeast infections. The book is filled with these contrasting images, painting the world as sometimes bleak, sometimes absurd, which is something a lot of people can relate to, whether you live on a farm or not, says Lang.
And I feel like the state of limbo that like many people are like sort of asked to kind of just live in is really an impossible ask.
And it's an ask that the two sisters react very differently to as the novel progresses. Since the farm is no longer the future for them, the two sisters find different identities to wear.
I think Bernadette feels like she's the stable one and she's the predictable one, and that her sister is the anarchist, if you will.
Which is a tough spot, I feel like, to be the stable one. And I think she feels that pressure, right?
Totally. You know, it's one of those things where, like, she had to choose something because she had to be different than her sister, her older sister. But you're right, the stability, she sort of despises it. I mean, it's both gives her an identity So she kind of leans into it, but she also wants to sort of light it on fire.
You could read Us Fools as a tight-knit family drama, an historical look at the farm crisis, or an exploration of how economic realities can force us to pick an identity. But more simply, Lang says, it's just a book about America. Andrew Limbong, NPR News.
This is NPR News.
This is The Setlist on KAXC, where we highlight live music around the area for the upcoming week. I'm Malachi Coons. We are looking at shows in Duluth, Gilbert, Bemidji, and Aiken. Starting things off in Duluth, Wusso's Concert Cafe is hosting 1 week live every night this week through Saturday. It is the 22nd edition of this week-long festival with multiple performers each night from around the Twin Ports and northeastern Minnesota. Live recordings taken from the shows will make up the album 1 Week Live Volume 22, a long-running album showcase of the music scene in the area. And musicians this year include Minor Moon, the Urban Hillbilly Quartet, and the Penny Peaches. Again, that is each night at Wusso's Concert Cafe in West Duluth through Saturday. On Thursday, you can catch Mark Joseph at the Ore House in Gilbert at 7 p.m. A songwriter and guitarist who plays many genres like Americana, blues, country, and rock. He's also a former guitarist for Minnesota jam band The Big Woo and released his fourth solo album, Palisade Peach, at the end of 2023. Thursday night, 7 p.m. in Gilbert. On to Saturday at 7 o'clock, you can catch the blues jam duo Brothers Burn Mountain at Bemidji Brewing. Ryan and Jesse Dermody have a one-of-a-kind live show that features extended, improvised jams, lengthy drum solos, and even instrument swapping. And at the same time, in Aiken, folk duo Morning Bird will be at Sampa Guida. Violinist Jill Burks and guitarist Rob Wheeler share vocals with their mix of original songs and traditionals. Their debut album, Echoes in the Meadow, came out earlier this year. That show is Saturday in Aiken at Sampa Guida at 7 p.m. The set list is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, and we'll post the latest edition every Wednesday at kaxe.org.
It is 7:51, and you're listening to the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with Heidi Holton, and we're here until 9 o'clock, and then we're going to hand things over to Gina the Knife for On the River.
We receive support this morning from Sanford Bemidji Orthopedics and Sports Medicine Center, specializing in total joint repair. More at sanfordhealth.org.
And we receive support from Dragonfly Coffee, located in Central Square Mall in Grand Rapids, featuring a scratch bakery and offering espresso, bubble tea, and more. Empowering inclusion and community through employment, special order pricing, and more at drinkdragonfly.com.
We've been talking apples, our question of the week. What's your favorite thing to do with apples? We heard from Jim. He has a caveat. He says, not sure you want to share this with your listeners, but here's my apple story. In 1965, a kid named Jay was a bully in our class. After school one day, I picked up a road apple and I threw it at him, hitting him on the back. Oh, I see what he's saying. I ran home with a smile on my face. Of course, he beat me up the next day, but it was so worth it. I think he's talking about something different with a road apple, is he not?
I don't know.
I think he is. We also we were talking about scary movies, or we started to talk about them, and we heard, good morning, Heidi and Andrew. Zack Snyder's 2004 Dawn of the Dead remake is an annual spooky season must-watch for me. Zombies at their finest.
See, I'm a huge fan of the original Dawn of the Dead
by
George Romero. I've never seen the Zack Snyder remake.
Ah. I like Shaun of the Dead. That's a favorite of mine.
Is that your favorite zombie movie? Have you ever seen Night of the Living Dead?
No. What's the one with Bill Murray and Woody Harrelson?
Zombieland.
Yes, I saw that as well.
I notice you're picking a lot of the comedy zombie movies.
I don't like to be scared so much. I did like Get Out.
That's a good one.
Yeah. How about you? What do you have, traditional scary movies?
I don't have like an annual traditional one. I try to like see a bunch of ones that I haven't seen before. Like last year, I finally saw Child's Play for the first time.
Oh.
And Friday the 13th, the original, for the first time.
Child's Play freaked me out as a kid because that doll spins around and says my name.
Oh, really?
Heidi, Heidi, ho.
Oh, I don't remember that, but that would be terrifying.
Yes.
So far this year, last night I checked out Cape Fear, the Martin Scorsese version.
Oh, yeah.
With Robert De Niro and Nick Nolte and Jessica Lange. And that was pretty good.
Yeah.
And then I saw this 90s classic called Phantoms, starring Ben Affleck and Peter O'Toole.
Really? Huh.
And its famous, probably most famous lasting legacy is in Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back. Jay says, Phantoms was the bomb to Ben Affleck's character.
Oh my gosh. We'd love to hear from you. Do you have a horror movie to recommend or a spooky movie or one that you watch every season? You can text us 218-326-1234.
If I had it on Blu-ray, I'd probably watch it every year. It would be John Carpenter's The Thing.
Okay.
I think that's my favorite scary movie of all time.
Wow. All right.
Have you ever seen it?
No.
That one would freak you out.
Okay. I don't think I need that.
So now we're going to play a song from our album of the week. It's J.D. McPherson. The album is called Night Owls. It's his first album since the 2018 Christmas album Socks. On this album, the 80s influence is a wonderful addition to his retro 60s sound. And I listened through this album yesterday to try and find a perfect song to play this morning.
Okay.
And I think my favorite one is Don't Travel Through the Night Alone.
Ooh.
Perfect for our spooky talk.
It is.
Sand.
And that is J.D. McPherson with Don't Travel Through the Night Alone from his new album Night Owls. That is our album of the week. You can hear it throughout this week. Let us know what you think of it.